From Kansas City, Missouri, this is Patty Cahill of public radio station KCUR-FM. We're bringing you coverage of a press conference held this afternoon in Kansas City by Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The conference followed a speech by the Secretary before the International Relations Council. This is a third stop made in Missouri by Dr. Kissinger in the last 24 hours. He appeared in St. Louis last night and this morning had breakfast at the Capitol in Jefferson City with Governor Christopher Bond and several state legislators. Dr. and Mrs. Kissinger will visit Mrs. Bess Truman at the Truman Home in Independence, Missouri before their return to Washington this evening. Now, the first question for Secretary of State Kissinger.
Has the U.S. government had any communication, direct or indirect, with the Cambodian government over the ship? Second, have we entered a period when we must expect harassment in and around Indochina?
We cannot go beyond the statement that was released by the White House yesterday. And in that statement, it was made clear that the president had instructed the Department of State to demand the release of the ship and of the crew. Those diplomatic efforts are in progress now. The precise steps are, we will not discuss for the time being. With respect to the second question, the United States will not accept harassment of its ships on international sea lanes. And whether it can be expected or not is a question that I wouldn't want to answer. We will not accept it.
Secretary, can you confirm a Reuters report that a U.S. reconnaissance plane was fired on at the time the ship was seized?
I have not heard of such an event. I don't think this is true.
Mr. Secretary?
At the time the ship was seized, inconceivable, because we didn't know about it until 3 or 4 hours later.
Secretary, we get a sort of a puzzled picture out here in the Midwest. We're very much concerned, being Midwesterners. We have a picture of troops poised for movement, ships sailing into the Gulf of Siam, aerial surveillance, and a meeting today of the National Security Council. Can you give us anything beyond what you've already said without violating any security regulations on a general assessment of the situation and whether this could be just an isolated incident or a pattern?
I really cannot tell you whether it is an isolated incident or a pattern, whether it was a deliberate action by the Cambodian government or by some local commander, because what you should remember is that even in Washington, when these events occur, the information can be very confused and fragmentary. At this point, we are making efforts to secure the release of the ship. At the same time, the words of the White House statement yesterday were carefully chosen. And they've been reiterated since. So you can assume that we are not taking the matter lightly. But we do want to give an opportunity for diplomatic efforts to succeed.
Yes. You have said, and the president has said, that we will pursue serious consequences unless this ship is released. Can you tell us what serious consequences the president could pursue without congressional approval?
Well, I didn't say he would pursue them without congressional approval. But he has certain inherent powers to protect American lives and American property. But it would be done in close consultation. Whatever would be considered would be done in close consultation with the Congress.
What could be considered? What are your options other than the
Congress? That's what we are at the moment considering in Washington, and there'll be other meetings on the subject. Yes.
Recently, Abba Iban said that the reason that you weren't too successful with the Mideast peace was because the Israelis themselves caused you to have a few problems there. Could you comment on that, please?
The The problem of the negotiations in the Middle East is extremely complicated. And it really, when you analyze it, you have to, it depends at what point in time you start. The negotiation is based on the fact that Israel has to give territory or contributes territory in return for, which is a tangible thing, in return for intangible concessions in the form of promises, steps towards peace, new legal commitments, and so forth. Now, how to balance these two is, under the best of circumstances, an extremely difficult and complicated matter. In this negotiation, it was further complicated by the fact that there were many Arab pressures, that within Israel there were many very profound political divisions, and I think that it is more useful for us to concentrate on what we will do in the future rather than going over what went wrong in that particular negotiation.
Mr. Secretary, Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, according to the Associated Press, has had a book censored. And according to the Prime Minister, the book is so potentially explosive that if it were published, it would force your resignation. Do you know of such a book, and what is your reaction to it being censored?
Well, there are so many competing groups trying to force my resignation that I really don't want to give that. I don't want to give that much credit to any book that any Israeli journalist could be writing. I don't doubt that the publication of confidential negotiations, an exchange of views between us and the Israeli government, could be embarrassing, particularly given the closeness of our relationship. We are apt to speak with considerable candor about events and personalities. On the other hand, the main lines of our policy will clearly known, and I don't know about the book, I don't know about the event. Somebody told me about this story, and it seems to me that it's my fate at press conferences to talk about my resignation.
Along the same line, the book alleges that you made a number of disparaging remarks about Soviet and Arab leaders. Do you think this will make them suspicious and affect future negotiations with the Arabs and the Soviets?
I am not particularly worried about this. This is, I don't think it will affect the future negotiations either with the Arabs or with the Soviets, with whom we are in constant touch, and they know our view.
Secretary, quid pro quo in the Middle East. We seem to be on the verge of normalizing relations with Cuba, and what kind of quid pro quo can we expect there?
Just a minute. We are not on the verge of normalizing relations with Cuba. We faced in the OAS a situation where more and more countries were going ahead on their own in restoring diplomatic and commercial relations with Cuba, despite the fact that the OAS had voted sanctions. Last year in Quito, there was a meeting of Western Hemisphere foreign ministers in order to lift the designed to lift the orders, the sanctions on Cuba. Those, according to the statutes of the OAS, lifting of sanctions as the imposition of sanctions requires a two-thirds majority. This failed by one vote. Afterwards, a number of countries went ahead anyway to restore diplomatic and commercial relations with Cuba. So the only issue that is being discussed at this moment is how to bring the practice of the OAS into line with the statutes. It does not affect the American policy directly, and it does not mean that we're going to normalize relations with Cuba. I indicated in a speech a few weeks ago that we are in principle prepared to improve relations with Cuba on the basis of reciprocity. This, however, requires negotiations, and it requires negotiations with the United States government, not with with visitors. And until these negotiations have taken place, and they haven't even begun yet, your question, the implication of your question is quite premature.
President Ford, expressed himself as quite upset and disappointed the attitude of the American public towards the Vietnamese refugees. Do you share his anger and upset?
People who work with me know that my nature is very even-tempered, so anger is not something that they would associate with me. Now, I was also profoundly upset. This is, after all, a country in which we were heavily involved for 15 years. And we have an obligation to people who, in reliance on us, put themselves into a position where their well-being and perhaps their survival is in jeopardy as a result of their association with us. We therefore felt we had a moral obligation to help as many of those who felt threatened to escape from South Vietnam. And the lot of a refugee cut off from his society and from everything that is familiar to him and moving into a totally new environment is in any case very difficult. I think we have an obligation to them. I think they deserve our compassion and our support. And I have the impression that since the initial hesitation, the American people have now rallied to the view of the president.
What is your reaction to the refusal of Thailand to allow these U.S. Marines who are on Okinawa to go into Thailand for possible use in connection with the ship's seizure?
Well, I'm not. I have not been informed that this has officially taken place, and if it has taken place, whether or not it has taken place, it is clear that recent events in Indochina have seriously affected the Thai perception of the degree to which they can remain closely associated with the United States, especially on issues that primarily concern the United States. So leaving aside this particular report, whose authenticity I'm not sure about, this is a basic fact of the present Thai situation. Yes.
Secretary, why is the United States selling a Hawk air defense system to Jordan, and did you discuss the sale with King Hussein last November?
We've been discussing the sale of air defense equipment to Jordan. I forget when the discussion started. Many months ago. This is not something that was started now. It's something that has was started probably in November, maybe even before that. I don't have the exact date in my mind now. Jordan has been the most has been extremely moderate, extremely restrained. Did not participate in the last war. Is under great pressure from neighboring countries that get a great deal of Soviet military equipment, some of which even offered their own equipment to Jordan. And we felt that it was in the overall interest of the United States, in the overall interest of the stability of the area, that we continue to be the principal supplier of military equipment to Jordan, and as a means of encouraging a continuation of the moderate and restrained course. The fact that this agreement was finally concluded, it had been agreed to in principle many weeks previously, in fact, during March, and so it was just a question of...
Do you recall discussing the issue with King Hussein when you were in Jordan last November?
It is highly probable that I did, but I would not want to tie myself to any date. I certainly discussed it last fall with him on a number of occasions. But whether it was in November, I cannot remember.
Secretary,
I could check it. It's not a question of...
A few months back, a New York congressman was promoting a resolution to repeal the native-born requirement for U.S. presidents. Do you have any interest in such a resolution?
I consider him one of the leading statesman legislators of our time. And I'm campaigning for his re-election.
Secretary,
yeah.
In some quarters, the Kissinger personal shuttle diplomacy is considered dead, and in other quarters is considered recessed. What is your own evaluation of the chances of another try at an interim agreement before Geneva?
Well, it depends very much whether both parties or one party, either party, comes up with something that makes it possible. The last shuttle diplomacy depended really on two concurrent negotiations. The negotiation between Egypt and Israel, and the negotiation within the Arab world to make it possible for Egypt to go ahead. It will not be easy to recreate these conditions, and in any event, it would be unwise and risky for the United States to engage its prestige at this level unless there were some assurance from the parties ahead of time of a probable success. So we will be able to make a better judgment on that after President Ford has spoken to President Sadat and Prime Minister Rabin. At this moment, we are not familiar with any new ideas that have come from either side that would encourage us to resume shuttle diplomacy. On the other hand, we don't want to exclude it at any point in the next months if conditions are such that this would be the best way to promote peace in the Middle East.
Mr. Secretary, you're missing in your
speech. It doesn't seem to make any difference to my point, please.
This afternoon, the necessity of building world grain reserves.
Yeah.
It has come to our attention in our newswire service here that the USDA has figures a little bit opposing to what the State Department has recommended for world grain reserves quota. I think USDA wants 20 million tons of grain put in reserve, whereas the State Department wants 60 million tons for put in reserve.
That's the nuance of difference.
Yes, it is. And I was wondering if you had reached any conclusion, and if you had, what would the compromise be? How many times?
Well, the principles that I outlined today on the World Food Reserve have been agreed to by the Agriculture Department, and therefore it is a historic occasion when both the State Department and the Agriculture Department have a joint position. Now, how you would translate, and you remember that one of the principles is that the reserves should be able to meet foreseeable shortfalls or something like that. I think that would tend to push them to the higher rather than to the lower figure on that spectrum. But obviously the precise figure is one that will have to be negotiated.
Mr. Secretary.
Yes.
In several of his speeches, former President Nixon referred to the situation in Vietnam as peace with honor. Whatever happened to peace with honor, did it ever really exist?
I think it is important in assessing any foreign policy to look, first of all, at the alternatives that were available. After all, we found 550,000 Americans engaged in combat in Vietnam when we took office. And we found an existing and constantly growing demand for the withdrawal of American forces and the release of American prisoners. And if you remember, the criticism that was made of our efforts at the time was not that we were making too many concessions. The universal criticism was that we were asking for too stringent conditions. Secondly, it was our objective, for which we do not apologize, not to end a war in which the United States had suffered tens of thousands of casualties and spent untold treasure by overthrowing the government with which we had been largely responsible for installing and with which we had been associated for so many years. So our definition of peace with honor was a withdrawal of American forces, a release of American prisoners, and to create conditions in which that government would have an opportunity to survive. Now, in the 2 years after the agreement was signed, many conditions changed in ways that were totally unpredictable at the time the agreement was signed. One was the total collapse, or the substantial collapse of executive authority in the United States as a result of Watergate, which encouraged pressure. Secondly, were a number of legislative restrictions, and third, were reductions in aid. We thought, and I still believe, that the terms we achieved were better than anybody thought possible at the time. And we thought that they were in the national interest and that the United States should not put it on itself to end such a war by overthrowing its allies. And I think the consequences we are seeing today would have been even more severe if we had done this, and that was the only alternative we had at that time.
Secretary, do you feel that in the light of recent events such as the communist takeovers of South Vietnam, Cambodia, and now apparently Laos, that the domino theory is manifesting itself?
I have always held the view that any action in foreign policy has consequences, that you cannot end these consequences simply by denying that they exist. So a certain domino effect is inherent in any major action. And when a great country like the United States engages in a massive enterprise for 10 years, and then this enterprise founders, inevitably, there is a certain domino effect. Now, our problem is not to deny that this effect exists, but to manage the new situation. We would like to avoid a debilitating debate about these events. And I want to make clear that my answer on peace with honor was in response to a question. It is not an issue which we will raise. It is now important to face the facts that we now confront and to deal with them. I believe we can deal with them, and we will deal with them. But we can't deny that there have been consequences.
Mr. Secretary, can you say why you chose St. Louis and Kansas City as forums for foreign policy speeches?
Well, I believe that the conduct of our foreign policy requires very strongly the support of the American people. And I believe also that here in the center of America, it is that we have too much of a tendency to take it for granted. I've been invited for many months to visit St. Louis, and therefore I took the opportunity of this period when I believe that it is important for the public to understand that we have a purpose in foreign policy, that we think it can be realized, to talk about our political objectives in one part of Missouri and then about our economic objectives in another. This is essentially why I chose to come.
Mr. Secretary, in North Korea, do you foresee any type of movement across the DMZ there, or any jockeying for a more stronger position in that area?
The President has strongly reaffirmed our commitment, our security commitment to South Korea. As you know, this commitment is one that is embodied in the treaty, which has been ratified, and therefore there's no ambiguity about what our commitment is. I do not believe that there will be a North Korean military move unless North Korea questions the validity of our commitment. And I think they would make a mistake if they did this. Well, we have 40,000 troops there.
Secretary, since about 1919, the U.S. foreign policy with regard to the communist country has generally been based on the single theme of containment. You were talking about dealing with the consequences of recent developments in Indochina. It seems apparent that that the idea that what's theirs is theirs, and what's ours is we'll talk about, has not worked too well. Is there any chance that there will be a major change in foreign policy?
The policy of containment does not mean what theirs is theirs and what ours we'll talk about. What hasn't worked in Indochina is not that that they talked about what was ours, but that for a variety of reasons, we were not prepared to sustain the effort there, or the effort was never capable of being sustained. But in any event, it is not a correct description of American foreign policy that what is theirs, and what ours we'll talk about, yes.
Mr. Secretary, what are the prospects of Thailand and Burma? Will they need help to survive?
Well, Burma is, of course, a neutralist country and has no it has diplomatic relations with us, but it has no form of security relationship with us. Thailand is a member of the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization and as such is connected with us in that military organization. What Thailand will do in the light of events in neighboring countries, which the United States proved unable or unwilling to stem, I would expect that Thailand will review its policy, and indeed it has stated that it will review its policy. The willingness of all countries that are potentially threatened by North Vietnamese or other communist pressures in Southeast Asia to resist is one of the issues that will have to be looked at in assessing the consequences of Indochina. Yes,
sir. Secretary, a report from Washington today indicates the possibility the Mayaguez was carrying military weapons, in fact, under lease to the U.S. Military. Is this correct?
To the best of my knowledge, this is not correct. The last information that I had was that it was not carrying weapons, that it was a container ship carrying miscellaneous cargo, including some PX supplies. But it is not something to which I want to be finally held because I have not seen the manifest. What I do know is that the highest officials of the government, when they learned of this, were dealing with it as a merchant ship, finding out information from the company to which it belonged, and therefore we are dealing with it as the seizure of an American merchant ship on peaceful trade in international waters, and I think no other interpretation has yet come to my attention or is valid.
Mr. Secretary, what's been learned about Cambodia's possible reasons for taking the ship? Have they made any communication indicating why they didn't take
the
action?
I don't want to speculate on this. I have no...
Have we been in communication with them on those grounds?
I have said that we are pursuing diplomatic efforts to secure the release of the ship.
Mr. Secretary, how much pressure is there on the administration to use force now to get the ship back? If there is some pressure, where is it coming from? Which quarters of government?
Well, as you all know, I got out of town as soon as things got hot. So, but I've been in close touch with Washington. We are proceeding with deliberation and determination. And we will make the decision not on the basis of what pressures are brought on us, but what is most likely to secure the release of the ship.
Who is bringing pressure on you, though? Is the Pentagon, is Congress, any sector of Congress?
Well, I have seen a lot of public statements that have been made by various congressmen of various shades of views, but I think that the, as far as the government is concerned, I attended one NSC meeting. I've had a full report on another one. I have the impression that the government is fully united on the course that needs to be taken. There are no pressures within the government that are trying to push the president in a direction in which he doesn't want to go. So I think this ought to be looked at from the point of view of a problem that the country has with which it is trying to deal in the most effective way possible.
Mr. Secretary, have you taken a stand on participation in a Geneva conference by the PLO?
We have not taken a formal stand on it. Our view is that until the PLO recognizes the existence of Israel in the relevant resolutions, we don't have a decision to make, because until that is done, we don't see that any negotiation with it could be even theoretically contemplated. After that, we might look at the problem, but this situation does not now exist.
So, been asked before about hawks. Were you saying that the supply of hawks to Jordan is likely to keep Jordan out of the next war if there is one?
It enables Jordan to pursue the kind of moderate policy that we have sought to encourage, and to rely on its own resources rather than on those of its neighbors or other foreign countries.
But wasn't its lack of air defense its reason for not being in the last war, and now they will have an air defense?
I think they would have no difficulty getting an air defense if they wanted badly enough from any number of sources.
Secretary, why was it not possible then to keep that decision in abeyance until after the reassessment of Middle East policy?
Partly because there have been a whole series of ongoing shipments to Israel that have also continued during this period of reassessment, and this particular issue, this particular negotiation was more in the category of an ongoing one than of a massive moving into a totally new area of technology.
Wasn't this a totally new weapon system? And the Israelis have been asking also for new weapon systems like the Lance and the F-15.
Well, but the Lance and the F-15, the Israelis possess Hawks. The Lance and the F-15 are in a quite different category. And indeed, the F-15 can't be delivered until late 1977 anyway, so that no irrevocable decisions have been taken there.
Thank you, Secretary.
Secretary of State Henry Kissinger concludes his press conference held earlier today at the Hotel Muehlbach in Kansas City, Missouri. Technical production for this program by Larry Keck and Mark Morelli. I'm Patty Cahill of KCUR-FM at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Funds for this broadcast provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.